still great adventures of me, Tom Terrific, with Mighty Manfred the Wonder Dog. Terrific!
I'm Tom Terrific, greatest hero ever. Terrific is the name for me, 'cause I'm so clever. I can be what I wanna be, and if you'd like to see, follow, follow me. If you see a plane on high, a diesel train go roaring by, a bumblebee or a tree, it's me. When there is trouble, I'm there on the double, from Atlantic to Pacific. They know Tom Terrific.
And this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger in the bunker right here in North Central Indiana.
Yeah, Terrible Tom Terrific. Right here in the bunker on Wednesday, Wotan's Day, Dave Lane's favorite day. And it is the 23rd of April, 2014. And we're all set to go here. A little chilly. It warmed up real good last week, and then it cooled off. I had to take my shorts off, put on back on my long pants. It's getting to be a sort of a problem here, going from hot to cold so quickly. Oh yeah, I sent you fellows an ad, guys and gals, out today that, just in case there's somebody who might be interested, I'm selling this little car for a friend of mine. And it's a time of the year when that kind of car should be in demand. Anyhow, I sent you the pictures on. If you know anybody that wants a nice, clean, low-mileage sports car, well, this is a place to come. A little small for me. Not too small, but I can get in and out of it. But it's not as easy as it used to be. Well, here's one of those stories that just dorks me, you know. UK man going to jail over racist YouTube video. Ah, man, over there in Britain, I wouldn't last 5 minutes. They'd have me in the clink immediately. That's why they put out all the immigration officers when it was rumored I was going to England about 10 years ago. Maybe it was a little longer than that. And I read an article in the paper, a British paper, that somebody sent me the clipping, that they had all the ports covered so that Metzger couldn't get in here, man. Surprisingly, how many right-wing pseudo-racist Brooks Brothers suits-wearing people get into these countries, no problem. Well, Terrible Tommy, who's never been convicted of a felony or anything, and they somehow don't want me in there. Does that mean I'm saying the right thing? And these other people are just sort of tickling their ears. Well, anyhow, a Wolverhampton man was sentenced on the 19th after uploading videos with racist content to YouTube. Oh, my. Christopher Phillips, formerly known as Darren Clift, 23, was found guilty of stirring up racial hatred. In other words, he wants to keep England white or return it to white. After posting a clip showing a life-size gollywog, being hanged by someone in a Ku Klux Klan costume, Phillips, a kickboxer tutor, was arrested by counter-terror officers. I wonder why they're not arresting all the people in the British government for participating in aggressive war against thousands and thousands of people in the Middle East that they have bombed and killed and mutilated. Can't understand that. Phillips, a kickboxing tutor, was arrested by counter-terror officers when he uploaded 3 clips of shocking mock execution. Not like the British military and the British MI6, who torture people all the time and are involved in murdering people by the thousands in the Middle East. No. No, the horror of the thing is it was a mock execution. The videos were allegedly filmed in March at a right-wing, there you go again, extremist music concert in West Wales attended by dozens of people. How many times do I have to tell you, boys and girls, those days are over? You can listen to all your music you want at home or in your bunker at home in the basement or whatever, but attending these rallies is suicide. During the hearing in October, he appeared to give photographers a white power clenched fist gesture while leaving the court. Well, a clenched fist gesture, I'm afraid to let you know, was a left-wing, actually a left-wing thing back in the 60s and 70s. And all the niggers were doing clenched fist salutes. So that is not a white power salute, even though maybe some of the guys have decided to use it. I don't care what they use myself. But let's get things straight. His dad took his own life shortly after he was arrested and interrogated. And Phillips has received death threats. Now, this is so sad that his father would commit suicide over this. His father should have had the cojones to stand up for his kid instead of taking the coward's way out over something like this. Phillips pleaded guilty to distributing a recording of visual images that were intended to stir up racial hatred at Wolverhampton Crown Court. Well, what about all these movies Hollywood puts out that have these mock killings they pass off as being real in the movies? What about all those? You know, those $100 million movies that show racist hangings and all that kind of stuff. Don't you think that's got more effect than some silly little stunt that's put on YouTube? Well, of course. This is how ridiculous the system is, and this is why the system deserves what's happening to it as it slowly crumbles. The presiding judge, John Warner, a good white Aryan man, of course, warned him of a period in custody. Phillips has been ordered not to access any social media websites. You will not have any free speech. No speech, free speech for you, but we drop bombs on people all over the world. MI6 assassinates and tortures people all over the world. But that's okay, because they have a license to do it, and you don't. A sad story. You have to fight differently, boys and girls, over there in England. You got to learn to fight. Don't fight fair. You keep wanting to fight fair and being right out in the open with everything. You need to be lone wolves over there in Britain. Don't fight fair and don't fight out in the open, for Christ's sake. It isn't worth it. You gain nothing. But the right-wing leaders will use you. And they do it all the time. And here again, they sell lots of these CDs. They did it in this country, too. Leaders that use the concerts and everything just to make a lot of money selling skinhead CDs. Yes, they did. Took advantage of a lot of people. And a lot of people got in really bad trouble over it. Well, one of our friends has seen this movie, Lone Survivor. I didn't go see it because I figured it would be a waste of time. But we do need people reviewing movies, even sometimes where it makes you puke to watch them. Don't shed any tears over this lone survival movie, our lone wolf says. I met and talked to several SEALs when I was in the military. Any racist who thinks these special ops guys won't attack them when they are told to is wrong. They will. The more of them that get killed overseas, the better, this lone wolf says. I just don't know where people get this thing in their head that American military won't attack white Americans. I mean, white military won't attack white Americans. They've done it ever since the country was formed. Just study history, for Christ's sake. When the military is given an order, you know, and they have absolute loyalty to the Constitution of the United States, no matter what, they'll do it. So don't ever think that these bastards won't shoot you down in the streets. Now, there may be a few that have their heart in the right place, and those are the lone wolves that are well installed in the military. They've been there for a long time, ever since we started advocating that way back in the 80s. And they're keeping their mouths shut, and there's going to be a time when they will be able to do service to their race. In the meantime, they can't be told apart from any other trooper, because they don't exhibit any racial ideas to their fellow soldiers. They don't hang up any racial crap in their lockers. They don't get racial tattoos. They don't try to go to racial meetings or concerts or anything like that. These are well-entrenched, deep-cover people that I don't even know. Eat your heart out, military-industrial complex. And you have no idea what rank they are. You may think that they're just lower rank. Well, like I told you before, I used to sit in the living rooms of three retired generals in Fallbrook, California, and drink their scotch and smoke their cigars, and they were very much agreeing with what we believe. Now, they didn't want to do anything because they were afraid of losing their retirement money. But there are others out there. There's plenty of them out there keeping their mouth shut and their powder dry. So just sorry I shoot that across the bow of the military-industrial complex. Yeah. Well, here's something else our lone wolf friend and compadre sent us. Here's an awesome workout for people who are short on time. Go to www.menshealth40plus.com/prison. Starting out, no one will be able to hit the numbers listed, but do your best. In a few months, you will be bad ass. I got to get onto that myself. You know, I do a lot of things, and I figure that's a lot of exercise, but not the kind I really need all the time. So I want to be badass, man. Right now, I'm sort of badass with a badass mind. I know one thing, when I look in the mirror and then look at people my age, men my age, I'm pretty happy with the way I am, and if I can get better, that's even better yet. Now, don't forget now, the cutoff date for paying or donating your donations is the 15th of the month. And if you add another $5 to your donation, you'll get the password to go into our newly created super archive history of all the speeches and all kinds of things from people long gone, you know. You know, Bob Miles, Butler, all of them. And I've got hundreds of tapes that we've got to get into and convert to MP3s. I'm going to be surprised myself at what I dig out. I've got cases and cases of them. And so, but just remember, get your donation in by the 15th. And if there's a problem and I screw up on getting it jotted down properly, will just email to merchandiseresist@yahoo.com and she'll help us straighten it out, okay? Because once in a while I put a letter on the wrong pile and then I get taken to the woodshed. Hey man, I paid that damn thing. You What's the matter with you? You getting old or something? No, I'm getting bold, not old. Now, somebody's written a book, Amazon's carrying it, called The Democratic Terrorist. They want me to raid it. Well, I haven't read the book, and I don't get a lot of time to read books. I should take more time, but I just don't have the time. So if you're out there and you've read The Democratic Terrorist, let me know what you think of it. And I'll try to read at least a synopsis of it and give them my opinion. I have a little clip here I want to play for you, one of my foraging in the middle of the night type things that was quite interesting. This professor that knows more than most people and probably anybody about Ukraine and Crimea, and also the connection to the demographics, the changing and the dropping of the white birth rate. And he's bold enough to say what he thinks. So I'm going to play this for you now, and I think you'll be happy you heard it.
Medieval times. And for 200 years, it's been, until 1954, to be precise,
right.
It had been part of Russia. It is also historically very important to the Russians because it was the site of the epic defense of Sevastopol in the Crimean War in the 1850s, and then again against the Germans. It was also a very important naval base. It still is. The Russian Navy in Sevastopol leased its premises from the Ukrainian government 3 years ago until 2042. And what is really important is that culturally, economically, geographically, and ethnically, it is and has been part of Russia. If we are now going to have a crisis with Russia over the legacy of the Secretary General of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, who transferred it to Crimea, it would be really ironic that 60 years later, the United States wants to be the upholder of Khrushchev's legacy, even if it means an optional crisis in which the U.S. has no interest whatsoever, because to the security and well-being of the United States, it does not matter whose flag flies over Sevastopol or Simferopol.
866-95-PATRIOT is our telephone number. This is fascinating to learn the actual history of this. Now, as it applies to the Ukraine, now tell us a little bit about, because our audience is very curious about this, Sergeant. How did the Ukraine become the Ukraine? A little bit of the history there, so then we get an idea of why the two aren't really supposed to be together.
The Soviet Republic of Ukraine was established by the Bolsheviks during the Civil War in Russia. And the Bolshevik Central Committee, which was largely composed of non-Russians, including various minorities that had a grudge against Russians, made Ukraine as big as possible so that many eastern regions were included that had no historic or cultural links with the Ukrainian speakers in the center and the west of the country. So all along, the Ukrainian Soviet Republic was in fact not a coherent nation. You had West Ukrainian Uniates, who many of them were under the Austrian rule, before that under the Polish rule. They are in union with Rome. They regard the Pope as the head of their church, even though they follow Eastern rite in their liturgy. And both culturally and emotionally, they belong more to Central European cultural space. In the eastern parts of the country, in the industrial basin of Donetsk and Dnipropetrovsk, and in the large city of Kharkov in the northeast, everybody speaks Russian, even people who declare themselves to be Ukrainian, and they also regard their links, their economic links to Russia, as very important, because they have a customs-free agreement with the Russians, which would have been jeopardized had Yanukovych signed the association agreement with the European Union. So even the last vestiges of Ukrainian industry would have been jeopardized, because with the imposition of tariffs, their industry would have been destroyed, and the European Union would have flooded the Ukrainian market with the German and Italian and French goods with which the local industry would not be able to compete. What is also important to remember is that when those borders were drawn, local people were not consulted. There were arbitrarily drawn boundaries by the Bolsheviks in the early 1920s, and let me repeat, by Nikita Khrushchev in 1954 when he transferred the Crimean Peninsula. In other words, they have no historic or legal validity in any meaningful sense, and therefore it's really fascinating to observe the so-called international community, and above all the United States, say that these borders are inviolable and eternal, even though they do not correspond to either ethnicity or language, or indeed to the wishes of the local population.
You know what's fascinating about this, Sergey, just listening to you talk and having read your piece from 2 days ago, is the comparison you make to what the United States, from what our stance is today, to what the stance of Lincoln was towards the southern states in 1861. We're basically saying, no, you're one Ukrainian union. You can't be separate states. You have to join the Ukraine, and you have to stay there. It's just simply amazing here that this nationalism, this imposed from the external nationalism, seems to be our calling card today, yet we have the audacity to call ourselves the bastion of freedom in the entire world. What do you think about that?
Let me draw a contemporary parallel. Scotland is due to have a referendum on independence later this year. And nobody in the United States is saying, oh, no, the whole of Britain should vote on Scotland's independence. And yet the position of John Kerry and the State Department is that Crimea has no right to vote on independence because the whole of Ukraine should decide about that. Now, by the same token, it should be also the English, the Welsh, and the Northern Irish who should be deciding the destiny of Scotland. Let me mention another example. There is Catalonia in Spain, northwestern province, which speaks a different language and which is also slated to hold a referendum. And that referendum, if it goes ahead, will be in violation of the Spanish Constitution. But nevertheless, Spain is determined to let it happen regardless, because they do not want to have any danger of the repeat of the Civil War of 1936-39, and they're looking for constitutional arrangements that would accommodate the Catalan striving for independence, and over 60% of people there want to be independent. So if we want to have anything resembling a standard set of rules guiding the conflict between territorial integrity on the one hand and the right to self-determination on the other, then let me repeat, what is sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. You cannot say, oh, Kosovo was a special case, no precedent applies. Well, Scotland is another special case, Catalonia is yet another. Because if you decide ad hoc which is valid and which is not, which is legitimate and which is not, that is not the rule of law, that is the rule of man.
Boy, I couldn't have put it any better myself. Final question for you, Sergeant. Thank you so much for your time today. My friend, Professor Donald Livingston, who is Professor Emeritus of Philosophy at Emory University and holds a similar title at Edinburgh University, has been one of the foremost American scholars writing about what you just talked about, and about how the imperialism that occurred in Europe in the 1500s, 1600s, 1700s, and 1800s, that all that brought about the shape of the countries that we have today and many of the alliances, that is all due to unwind, that what has been created by the imperialists is going to be uncreated And I don't know if we'll see it in our lifetimes, but we're going to see the decentralization of those European peoples back into their more smaller Republican spheres and countries and republics. Do you concur with that?
Oh, to a considerable extent, but with one proviso, and I know Don, he's a good friend of mine and he's a great fellow, but the problem in Europe is also a considerable influx of primarily Islamic immigration from North Africa and the Middle East, which is gradually changing the character of some of these countries. So it would be very ironic if falling birth rates in Europe combined with the weakening of central state structures and at the same time combined with the dictatorial regime of the European Union in Brussels, which is based on all sorts of inclusionist multicultural concepts that run contrary to the maintenance of traditional identities, Europe is in fact in grave danger of irreversible demographic and cultural change, which would require a sort of awakening, even belated awakening, and I'm particularly talking about France, where Muslim immigrants constitute approximately 12% of the population, but account for about one-third of newborns, because on current form, with the falling birth rates, the key states of Europe, such as Germany, Italy, France, and Britain, will increasingly become old countries with a very young, unassimilable immigrant population that does not share the outlook and the cultural assumptions and the emotional attachment to the country of in which they reside. So in answer to your question, local identities in Europe are alive and well, but whether they will be able to assert themselves will largely depend on the extent to which the demographic change brought about by Islamic immigration is stemmed.
Wow, and we have a similar problem here in the United States with the immigration from the Latin American countries. Just a final question. What do you think is Putin's long-term aim here? Is he trying to stave off what you just outlined? And my friend Mark Stein wrote about in his book America Alone about those European birth rates that France and Spain and some of those other countries can't even be able to sustain their current population levels through 2050 of natural born French or Spaniards. Is the same true in Russia? And what do you think Putin is up to long term?
Russia is also in the same boat. It has a big problem with demography, and it is certainly has not been able to resolve this yet, but at least the Russian leadership is trying to boost birth rates with systematic programs of encouragement, financial and otherwise, which are sadly lacking in Europe, because any attempt to assert the need for reproduction of old European nations is oddly enough equated with nativism and racism. Now, if the spotted owl is disappearing or the sperm whale, everybody and his uncle is up in arms, but when traditional European nations are disappearing, then it is the reason for yet another round of the celebration of diversity and multiculturalism. It is frankly a reflection of a diseased and deeply sick society.
Wow. All right, Sergeant, thank you so much. Sergeant Trifkir. If these Crimean punks are allowed to, and as you just heard Sergeant say, what they're basically doing is kind of reasserting their heritage and culture and are rejoining their ancient peoples, the Russians. They never were Ukrainians. They were assigned. They were told to be. You will be Ukrainian blobist. You Crimeans, you will be Ukrainian blobist. So they have blobists over there in Europe as well. Anyway, any event, I'll get a transcript and a clip of the day up from Serge's interview. later on today at MikeChurch.com. Folks, unless you've been in our telephone number, if you'd like to have, rights to self-determination with qualifications. Either you can self-determine or you can't. And if Kosovo can do it, and if the U.S. can back Kosovo and the Sudan and Caledonia and Scotland, then why can't Texas? Okay? Got it? Got it. Why can't Louisiana? Why can't Vermont? Folks, unless you've been living under or hiding under a rock, you heard the news stories about major retailers and the hack.
Well, did you pick up on some of that stuff? Now, here was a professor at a university saying exactly, really, what we're saying about both the United States, Europe, and all over where have been traditionally white countries. And he calls it a disease, a sickness. I guess that puts him in the same ball field as us terrible, unwashed, working class racists. Did you hear the key words in that little talk? Bolsheviks carved the Ukraine out. And remember, if you heard him right, he didn't say Jews. He said other people that didn't like Russia. In other words, New York Jews that were pretty much leading the Bolshevik revolution. So they were involved in that. And many other things along those lines. So next time you hear anybody tell you about Ukraine, say, did you know that the Jew Bolsheviks created it? Just carved it up and said, now you're Ukrainians? Oh, boy. Also, did you get the real hook in the whole thing there, where, of course, the EU and the West wants Ukraine to be totally involved with them, not only as a thorn in the side to Russia, but big business. Yeah, they want to move in there and take over, and of course that will kill the native Ukrainian business and manufacturing business, and it'll, like I always say, follow the money, boys and girls. You follow the money, you'll know what's going on, or very close to it. Well, I am happy to report to you glowing reports from the Black Ku Klux Klan, not only from Chicago, but all the major cities. There's really no need for the white Ku Klux Klan anymore. The Black Ku Klux Klan is doing a terrific job, and, of course, it's doing a really bang-up job over in Africa, in Somaliland and Kenya and over there. The Black Ku Klux Klan really has muscle over there, and they're working things out real well. If they just get these white, progressive, liberal, usually Nordic UN representatives out of there. Of course, the Black Ku Klux Klan is taking care of that, too. I see several of those UN people got bumped off in the last couple of weeks, so maybe they'll decide to go back to their progressive haunts in the Nordic countries where they usually come from, these UN people, and let the Black Ku Klux Klan keep things straight, which they're doing a great bang-up job. Just back off and leave them alone. And send them more weapons, but don't send them any food, and don't send them any aid, okay? And things will turn out real well. Well, at the risk of being labeled a communist, let's see about another aggression by the military-industrial complex and the predatory capitalists that run Washington. The U.S. Justice Department announced on November 26 that it had reached an agreement with the Swiss Weatherford International Limited Oil Services Company on a $252 million fine for alleged violations of U.S. sanctions imposed on countries such as Cuba, Iran, and Sudan. The measure falls within the framework of the Trading with the Enemy Act, unilaterally unopposed by the U.S. government. This new aggression on the part of the U.S. authorities confirms the evidence presented in Cuba's latest report to the United Nations on the need to end economic, commercial, and financial blockade imposed on Cuba by the United States, or the predatory capitalist, a demand recently supported by 188 UN member countries. The Cuban oil and gas industry is a target of measures designed by the U.S. government to hinder its development, access to advanced technologies, to oil products, and the necessary financing for its growth. There, you know. Now, you see what I... You know, they keep telling you now we're all a world community now, you know. What they meant was they've tied the economics of every country together with every other country in this worldwide network, and it has a control system. And so once they had that in place, then the next thing they could do, whoever controlled the largest amount of marbles, could say, we don't like what you're doing, we're going to put sanctions against you. You see, where you have independent countries, you don't have empires, it's harder for them to do that. But now with this interconnected worldwide economic situation, they can use sanctions to screw with everybody. U.S. State Department. Yeah. Okay, where was I here? The Cuban report presented to the United Nations notes that the blockade of the country undermines the sovereignty of third countries and the rights of individual citizens and enterprise not to be subject to U.S. legislation. Well, forget the rights bit. Anytime you hear somebody talking about rights, either they're a liar or they're stupid. That's all there is to it. And for the United States, corporate United States to be still waging war with Cuba is, of course, ridiculous. When we are in bed up to our anal cavity with China and other countries that are far more belligerent to the United States and even North Korea. So anyhow, that's what your predatory capitalists are doing, and the American people and the Republican and most of the Democrat Party are saying, oh, that's all right. That's all right. That's all right. We're exceptionalists. What they mean is the financial system is exceptionalist. Well, the South African communists finally admit Nelson Mandela's party leadership role. After decades of denials by both Mandela and the party, the South African Communist Party has at last admitted Nelson Mandela's leading role in their organization. Gee, I thought the Washington was anti-communist. Mandela, African Communist, 1990. Mandela wasn't just a member of the Moscow-controlled party. He was a secret leader of SACP's Central Committee. Gee, what are all those Christians out there going to say about that? Godless communism. From the SACP's Umsebenzi online. Last night, the millions of people of South Africa, a majority of whom the working class and poor, and the billions of the rest of the people the world over, lost a true revolutionary, President Nelson Rahulahuahua Mandela, Tata Mandidi. The South African Communist Party joins the people of South Africa and the world in expressing its most sincere condolences to Mrs. Greka Mako and the entire Mandela family on the loss of what President Zuma correctly described as South Africa's greatest son, Comrade Mandela. We also wish to use this opportunity to express our solidarity with the African National Congress, an organization that produced him and that he also served with distinction, as well as all his colleagues and comrades in our broader liberation movement. As Tata Mandita said, it's not the kings and the generals that make history, but the masses of people, the workers and the peasants. Yeah, right. Sure. The communists use the workers just as badly as the capitalists. The passing away of C.D.E. Mandela marks an end to the life of one of the greatest revolutionaries of the 20th century. And that's a little bit of an exaggeration, if you ask me. Who fought for freedom against all forms of oppression in both their countries and globally as part of the masses that make history? Right. Mandela's contribution to the struggle for freedom was located and steeled in the collective membership and leadership of our Revolutionary National Liberation Movement, as led by the ANC, where he was not an island. Mandela, we have had a brave and courageous soldier, patriot, internationalist, who, to borrow from Che Guevara, was a true revolutionary, guided by the great feelings of love for his people, an outstanding feature of all the genuine revolutionaries. At his arrest in August 1962, Nelson Mandela was not only a member of the then underground South African Communist Party, but was also a member of the party's Central Committee. To us, a South African communist, Mandela shall forever symbolize the monumental contribution of the South African Communist Party to our liberation struggle against the filthy, rotten white men. The contribution of communists in the struggle to the achieved South African freedom has very few parallels in the history of our country. After his release from prison in 1990, Mandela became a great and close friend of the communists till his last days. Whoa. In honor of this gallant fighter of the South African Communist Party, we'll intensify the struggle against all forms of inequality. Well, right there, you know they're lying idiots. Inequality? Of course. There is no such thing as equality. Including intensifying the struggle for Jew-type socialism as the only political and economic solution to the problems facing humanity. Would a sane world honor a covert Stalinist who, on Moscow's orders, set up a terrorist organization known for setting bombs in railway stations, nightclubs, and supermarket car parks? Well, of course it's okay. He's black. It's okay. A man who fought an obviously immoral, horrible apartheid system in order to replace it with an even worse Soviet-style socialism. Wow. There you go. I'm shocked. Father Mandela was a communist. Oh, I don't understand why it took so long to figure that out. Well, I see they had a poll about the president and how much he lies. It said specifically why so many Americans, 61% according to the Fox News poll, think that the president lies most of the time, and some of the time. It comes as no surprise today that Obama's defenders are sparing no invective for Fox News in the wake of that survey. Well, it's interesting because Fox News would never say that about the Bush crime family. They feel safe in saying about Obama. Of course, all presidents lie through their teeth all the time. I mean, historically, you can show that every president all the way back to Washington lied. The only thing is, they lie a lot more now than they used to, I think. Maybe not. But Obama lies consistently, like all leaders do. And probably the Bush crime family lied even more than Obama, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you know, not to be mistaken for being a pro-black person, And on the heels of the president's lying and the vice president's lying, I mean, one of the super biggest liars of this century so far is Dick Cheney. I don't think anybody has lied as much as that guy. But on the heels of these politicians that lie as an occupation, you've got the press, the lying, filthy, rotten American press. They wouldn't know the truth if it bit them in their usually kosher or white kosher asses. And if you want the news to be somewhat accurate, you're going to have to dig for it on the internet, because even Russia Today is suspect nowadays with some of the people they put on there and so forth like that. And for the average numbskull out there, the average sheep, they just won't dig it out at all. They don't care. They want somebody else to do their thinking, and it's being done for them right now. Yeah, and they'll pay the consequences. Unfortunately, you and I are going to have to live through it too. And I guess this information's almost old news that Obama and the military-industrial complex are sending paratroopers to Poland. Yeah. Fresh signs the situation in Ukraine may be unraveling. In response to the situation in the Ukraine, the U.S. has expanded their military exercises and have sent paratroopers into Poland. The Obama administration is taking a step by step closer to an all-out war with Russia. Well, if it wasn't Obama, it would be a Bush or someone like that. It doesn't make any difference. It's only the only difference is the party system. When one party does it, the other party's got to scream foul, foul. But when they do it, it's never foul. It's national security and patriotism. Yeah, baby. Are we seeing a beginning of the origins of the Second World War? Whenever you mention Poland, it rings a bell in the back of my brain about World War II. Wasn't it Poland that was the straw that broke the camel's back, getting that war going? And you know how they're doing this. They're just paying off Poland. All these countries that bow to Washington are just being paid off. They're just being hired. Well, I see they're attacking Andrew Breitbart's affiliation, supposedly, with neo-Nazi groups. Was captured on video by One People's Project, and they go on and on about how all these volunteers around the country are spying and following the neo-Nazis and know exactly what they're doing and everything like that. Well, it's nothing more than paper clippers. They clip articles out of the newspaper, just like the SPLC. It's 99% just clipping articles. And, of course, whenever a racial group says they're going to have a meeting or anything like that, well, of course, they clip the articles, and they may send some guy like this guy from, what the hell is that outfit? One People's Party or something down there. I think he's a fat black guy. They go down there with a camera and see people going into a building and coming out of the building and maybe getting into the meeting. And, I mean, well, it's a simple answer to all this. You don't have rallies, you don't have meetings, you don't expose yourself to the public except honestly like I do. The FBI doesn't have to worry about following me around. I tell everything I'm thinking right here on the radio show. I'm not hiding anything. I'm not hiding my contempt, my hatred, my love, and everything. I'm right out in the open. And they don't like to write that much about Tom Metzger. They say, oh, no, he's just out of the picture. He's out of the picture. Well, it's because I finally got goosed and walked straight. I mean, I finally woke up and played the game the way it should be played. And so they all congratulate themselves, along with the SPLC, at being really amateur detectives. But they do say in this one article that the FBI knows all about it. Well, if the FBI knows all about all these horrible racist haters, how come they didn't know about the Al-Qaeda guy that was living in San Diego, only an hour's drive from me, that was living next to an FBI informant, and then turned out on one of the planes that hit the big building, the Trade Center? How come they didn't know about and take that computer up there in Michigan that had all the goods on this stuff about 9/11? If the FBI, if that is the overall intelligence of the famous but incompetent, they're in big trouble. But boys, you don't have to worry. It's not going to take a lot of talent to follow Tom Metzger around. I go to town. Usually once a day I stop at the grocery, the P.O. box, I go to the hardware maybe, and I might even stop in at have a beer at the lodge, and if you want to send some informants around there to sit at the bar and listen to what I say, that's fine with me, because if you come in as a stranger, everybody in the place knows, hey, watch out for this guy. Okay. Oh, it's a lot of humor to all this. There's a lot of humor to this because of these people that take themselves so goddamn seriously, you know. Every time me and my gal go out for a drive to go someplace and I get a little lost, I say, don't worry about it, honey. I'm just trying to elude the FBI people that are tailing me. Boy, it's almost too hard to believe, but, you know, there's a Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership. America's most aggressive defender of firearms ownership. Well, you'd think that every Jew would want a machine gun, because there's neo-Nazis everywhere. They're all over the place. So why do most Jews want to pick up the guns? Or why do most Jews get abhorred with guns? The mafias, Jewish mafias, sure had plenty. This is what they say on their little Jewish keep your guns newspaper, and that's the put out by the Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, including cannons. Here's what they say. A twisted monster, a suspect at this point who will remain nameless in this account, who allegedly killed two people, a grandfather and his grandson, at a Jewish community center in Overland, Kansas, Overland Park, and a woman visiting her mother in a nearby village Shalom assisted living facility, had no way of knowing his victims weren't Jewish. Well, you're lucky he was a dumbass and didn't shoot you Jews. I mean, he went there to shoot Jews, and he shot people that weren't even Jews. So you lucked out that time, Jews. His choice of locations to attack the day before Passover, of course, every day in the year is probably a Jewish holiday, so you can't miss. Combined with a documented history of anti-Jewish vitriol and his shouting Heil Hitler from the back of the police car following his arrest, pretty clearly demonstrates someone with a fanatical and deranged hatred of Jew people. He also had a good reason to suspect his target locations would offer slim resistance. A phone call placed by an ally working with the Kansas State Rifle Association to the Jewish Center went unanswered due to the Passover holiday, but a call to Village Shalom confirmed that they are posted no guns. A follow-up visit this morning showed both facilities are posted. Even though such signs don't carry the force of law in the Sunflower State, except to pursue trespass charges, if a person refuses to leave, They serve to establish both a notice to those with evil intent as well as cultural expectations among patrons and visitors, so that even people in parking lots who habitually frequent such facilities will not likely be armed. And while both facilities reportedly went into lockdown, there is apparently not much that could have been done to incapacitate him had the killer chosen to gain entry into either one. I guess this is a message to the neo-Nazis that they can walk into any Jewish center and start blasting. Of course, furthering the propaganda of the people they don't like. Due to the policy, quote, due to the policies, procedures, and emergency preparedness training that Village Shalom has in place, our staff responded appropriately to the crisis, ensuring safety and security of our residents. President and CEO Matthew E. Lewis claimed in a statement following the attacks. The thing is, in their job posting for security officer, practice use of a firearm is nowhere mentioned in the job summary and responsibilities. Well, let's hire some minimum wage black guy and give him a baton. Nor is firearms training and certification listed under the required experience, education, skills, and qualifications. While the attacks reportedly happened outside, presumably before armed security could have proactively prevented them, the point is a cultural norm of disarmament prevailed. And it was not until the suspect had completed his attacks and left that he was apprehended, and significantly by armed policemen, whom he curiously opted not to fire on. Kansas is a shall issue state for carrying concealed handguns, and no permit is required for open carry. Not that any of that would have mattered to the suspect, who, while apprehended with several weapons, including a handgun and a shotgun, was also reportedly convicted of a federal felony on weapons charges in the 80s. Yeah, I remember that. But when he went to work for the FBI, they let him have all the guns he wanted. That means he is a prohibited person, barred by law from so much as touching a gun, let alone possessing and carrying one. That such edicts never stopped these intent on evil seems lost on doctrinaire gun rights prevention advocates. No, the FBI set him up. The FBI gave him all the freedom in the world. The FBI paid him, gave him a new name. He had all the weapons he needed. And they knew what he would eventually do. It didn't take too brilliant of a psychologist to know what Glenn Miller would do someday, if you've heard him speak. Something all too few Jewish leaders, from the ADL to local temples, seem willing to advocate, and which all too many of them disparage, an armed response. These are the opinion makers, the late Aaron Zellman, founder of the Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, called bagel-brained for embracing the very laws that ensure a government monopoly on violence. You catch that? A government monopoly of violence. Well, that's true, really. And by aligning themselves with progressive politicians and causes, such individuals and groups they represent are guilty of promulgating another significant denial of reality when they portray Nazis as right-wing extremists and condemn liberty-minded gun rights advocates as their ideological equivalents and as haters. It is now clear beyond all reasonable doubt that Hitler and his associates believed they were socialists, and that the others, including democratic socialists, thought so too. Well, he was. George Watson, author of... Well, he turned into a national capitalist, sorry. George Watson, author of The Lost Literature of Socialism, wrote in The Independent, quote, socialism offered the social intelligentsia of the Western world a blank check, and its license to kill included genocide. The only way to prevent group identity based on extermination on the individual and societal levels... Wait a minute. You're interrupting my show. While these U.S. Jews may have to borrow some of those atomic weapons back from Israel to protect themselves, the only way to prevent group identity-based extermination, like they're doing to the white race, on the individual and societal levels is for members of that group to have the means to defend themselves. Right. So, you agree with right to keep and bear arms. That's the only way words like never again will ever be more than hollow platitudes. Well, you know, we can agree with some of those things that Jew guy says. Yeah. I think it's sort of odd that the individual Jews are for picking up the guns. It's a strange thing. A strange thing. The Jews are just lucky that Glenn Miller was drunk, I guess. Couldn't find a Jew if he had to. Get the wrong people. But at least he got that far by working for the FBI. He would have never got that far if he hadn't been on the FBI payroll. So, Mr. Jew, you better point the finger where it belongs, towards the government itself that let Mr. Miller run around with guns after he had already been hung on with a felony. Well, you know why it is. The federal government needs a certain amount of terrorism. How could they implement more and more restrictive laws against everybody about everything unless they have some terrorism? So the FBI has to handle these people and pretty much direct them and help them in their activities, because they've got to have some terrorism. And where best to get it? Out of the right wing, because they can't seem to get enough of it out of the Muslims. So they have to train the right wing to do their job for them. Now, I guess there's some Jews living around here someplace. I don't really search them out, because most of them are just working class or regular businessmen, and I don't think that that I worry about individual Jews that live around here having some guns, because I don't I've never had a normal working class Jew attack me. I've had some crazies like Mordecai Levy of the Crazy Jewish Defense Organization, and Irv Rubin, who was as hated by Jews as he was by anybody else, attacked, but they never shot at me. They've shot at each other. When Irv Rubin had tried to kill, no, Mordecai Levy tried to kill Irv Rubin, firing at him off the top of that building on Mott Street, as Rubin and his attorney were running down the street. And here again, they accidentally put a slug in the leg of a poor white working class plumber, maybe even Jewish, I don't know, sitting in a truck having his lunch. So, am I worried about the independent individual Jews around? Hell no. But Mr. FBI employed Miller was, boy, I gotta get them before they get me. Well, I guess that's enough of this silliness for another day. Another show's in the can, man. I mean, in the bottle or in the whatever. And if I didn't offend you by defending Cuba today, and if I didn't offend you by saying I'm not worried about individual Jew gun owners that live around, if that didn't offend you, well, I'll try better tomorrow, okay? 14-5, and keep your mouth shut. Stay away from chat boards. Stay away from right-wing racial meetings. stay away from crazies, and you'll be all right.
Thank you.